This is Hemophilia Gene Therapy, From Dream to Reality, a show co-produced by the Canadian and Irish Hemophilia Societies. Here's your host, Brian O'Mahony.
Hello and welcome to the second in our video and podcast series, Hemophilia Gene Therapy From Dream to Reality. This is a co-production between the Irish Hemophilia Society and the Canadian Hemophilia Society. My name is Brian O'Mahony, the Chief Executive of the Irish Hemophilia Society. I'm your host for today's podcast. So during the last 40 years, we have witnessed tremendous advances in care and treatment for people with hemophilia, even more so in the last 10 years, a lot of innovation. Gene therapy has been a dream for most of those 40 years, and in the last 2 to 3 years, two gene therapies for hemophilia B have been approved by regulatory bodies, and one, Hemgenix, has been marketed in multiple jurisdictions around the world. But are they for everybody? So in this video podcast, we will ask four people with severe hemophilia B to answer this question. If gene therapy for hemophilia B were available tomorrow where you live, would you want to receive it? So let's meet our guests. The four people taking part in the podcast are James Foley from Ireland, Brian O'Loughlin from Ireland, Joseph Walsh from Ireland, and David Page from Canada. You're all very welcome. James, I will start with you. So can you tell me where you live, what you do, what your age is, and perhaps what your current treatment regime for hemophilia B is?
Yeah, perfect. Cheers. Thanks, Brian. So my own name is James Foley. I'm from Tralee, County Kerry in Ireland. I'm 34 and I'm an accountant, and I'm on prophylaxis, on it weekly, and it's the extended half-life I am on currently.
Okay, so you're already winning, James, because you're from County Kerry, which, as people know, is where God would have come from if he had the choice. Joseph Walsh, same question to you.
I'm from Dublin, Clondalkin. I'm 65 years old. I'm on prophylaxis every week for Factor 9.
What do you do for a living, Joe?
I'm a journalist.
Journalist, okay. I'll come to you next, David. David Page.
Hi there. Thanks for doing this. I live in a small village about an hour outside Quebec City. I'm treated with EHL prophylaxis once a week. I work actually part-time for the Canadian Hemophilia Society. I'm 73 years old, but my father lived to 96 and my aunts lived to well into their 100s. So I'm hopeful that if I do get access to hemophilia gene therapy, I could enjoy it for a long time.
And finally, Brian O'Loughlin.
Hi there. I'm Brian O'Loughlin. I live in Sutton, which is north of Dublin. I'm a public servant the last 3 or 4 years, but prior to that, I was an industrial designer for 30 years. I'm on weekly prophylaxis with extended half-life Factor 9.
Okay. And age, Brian?
55.
Okay. Thank you. So again, I'll start with you, James. Are you interested in receiving gene therapy, not interested or unsure?
Oh, no, I'm 100% interested in getting gene therapy, yeah.
And why is that?
Because I have the severe Factor 9 hemophilia. A lot of my problems are my joints. So I'm just after, well, in December of 24, I had an ankle fusion, and 7 weeks ago, I just had my elbow replaced. So to be honest, the reason why I want the gene therapy is to protect the rest of my joints. You know, my shoulders aren't great. My right elbow is the same. I'm actually due for another elbow replacement on my right. So I think it's just more, just the quality of life more than anything is what I wanted for.
And how's the elbow replacement recovery going for you?
Yeah, great. Yeah, fantastic. I have much more movement in it. It's stronger, no pain, which is great. Before I had the actual replacement, I was on prophylaxis every second day, which was a lot because I was taking 5,000 units. And because I was getting so many bleeds into the left elbow, that went up to 8,000 units depending, you know. And it was a lot of hospital admissions as well, just for pain management.
So, Brian, I'll come to you next. Are you interested in receiving gene therapy, not interested or unsure?
I would be interested, definitely, if it were to become available.
Okay, why would you be interested?
I'm in reasonably good shape in terms of joints and things so far, so I've had quite a lucky run of it. But ultimately, to remove certain limits on just day-to-day living, really, there's places I wouldn't go on holidays that I'd like to see. There's things that I've never done that I'd like to do. And I guess from a longevity point of view as well, to be in the best of health with family for as long as possible and to remove certain limits that I've come to accept over the years. So yeah, I would definitely consider it most enthusiastically if it was possible.
Okay, so a clear rationale, but different from James's, where he was more about protecting his joints. Okay. Joseph, can I ask you, are you interested, not interested, or unsure?
I'm unsure, but very open-minded. I was part of an earlier test, I think, a good while ago.
That's right. When we had a company coming in looking at potential clinical trial, and there were meetings and AAV antibody tests, yeah.
I was concerned at the time. I was concerned that I think there was a problem that maybe you could, if it didn't work, you could become immune to factor 9 treatment, which was a worry. And I was just concerned about something like that happening. Do you know what I mean? That you could be worse off. Now, I'm not sure if things have changed since.
No, and in fact, just to clear that one up, Joe, that's not the case. That if gene therapy doesn't work with somebody, you can always go back to your previous treatment.
Okay. You know, my Uncle Hillary became immune to treatment, but he didn't get gene therapy. So it could happen either way, I suppose. Right. Well, my position is that I'll be 66 in a month's time. I've had 2 knee replacements and 2 elbow operations. The fact that the treatment is working very well for me, my problems all stem from history. I think everyone else is younger than me. I feel I can travel wherever I want to go with the treatment. It's working well for me.
Okay. And David certainly isn't younger than you. David, coming to you?
Yes, I have been interested in gene therapy. Unfortunately, I was too old for one of the clinical trials. 65 was the deadline. And for another one, you had to be AAV antibody positive, and I was negative, so I wasn't eligible for that trial either. So I have been interested, and I'm, you know, waiting to see if it becomes commercially available, or perhaps there'll be another clinical trial that I can be eligible for. But, you know, I maintain my right to change my mind right up to the last minute.
So you'd be willing to look at a licensed gene therapy or indeed participating in another clinical trial?
That's correct.
Can I delve in with each of you now a little more deeply into the reasons for your current thinking on this in terms of in relation to current health, but also in terms of the safety, the efficacy, the logistical decisions and your readiness for this or lack of it? I'd like you to think about, in terms of factor IX gene therapy, what do you think currently about safety, the effectiveness and the monitoring and follow-up required? Can I start with you, James?
Yeah, so I suppose basically just with the gene therapy, you know, I know the results are varied, you know, they're not actually, you're not guaranteed certain results. And so I think just with my life at the moment, just being in another hospital and just the way my joints are, it would be nice to, I suppose, not worry that when's my next bleed, when's it going to happen, you know. And so the way I see it, I'm damned if I do enough, I'm damned if I don't in regards to the gene therapy. Now I know there is, you know, complications, I suppose, with the liver. And I know, you know, that it is a virus and it is an add-on to your DNA. But you look, if I did go for it and it didn't work out, then so be it. You know, I still have the prophylaxis to fall back on. But regarding the actual gene therapy, yeah, if I got a rise of 30%, I'd be very happy with that.
If you got a factor IX expression of 30% or above, you'd be very happy with that.
I would, yes. So basically, my clotting at the moment is so it's less than 1%. So it would be a miracle to have 20 or 30%, and anything above that, then fantastic.
Okay, so you'd set your expectation on expression ideally at 30% plus. Yeah. How would you feel if you had gene therapy and you got 10% or 5%?
Well, obviously, I suppose it'd just be, you know, another knock. But at the end of the day, like, I still have the prophylaxis there and I can still take that and, you know, to prevent further bleeding. But like I said, you're damned if you do and if you're damned if you don't. So I'm very willing to take that risk to, you know, fingers crossed that I do get those kind of results with the gene therapy.
And if you were getting gene therapy tomorrow, ideally, what would your expectation be in terms of how long it would be durable for, how long the factor expression would last?
From what I know anyway, you know, how long it lasts could be 10 years, could be more, you know, which is great. You know, I'm 34 at the moment, so it'd be great to enjoy life now instead of waiting maybe another 10 years until a new product comes out, you know, regarding gene therapy. So, yeah, like, to be honest, the only thing is just quality of life for me at the moment. And even traveling, it'd be great not to carry factor with me traveling. you know, especially for work or holidays, you know, things like that. Because, you know, you have to get letters from the doctor to say you can carry X amount of medication on a flight with you. So, yeah.
Okay, David, I'm going to come to you next with the same question. In terms of safety, efficacy, the follow-up required, what's your thinking?
Yeah, well, I've got, you know, several reasons for wanting gene therapy. I think right now, even though I have good prophylaxis, I do fall below 10% a lot of the week. So my ABR, my annual bleeding rate's up around 6, which is probably too high. So I'd be hoping that I could get better results with gene therapy. I think something in the neighborhood over 15% would be good. That seems to be sort of a critical point below which people don't bleed very much. I'm also, I have terrible veins and they're getting worse all the time. Nurses hate to see me coming because they have trouble with my veins. That's not going to get better when I'm, you know, 80 or 90. So I think that would be another factor that leads me to be more interested. And certainly travel, you know, it gets harder and harder to travel as you get older, you know, insurance and all of those things. So I think, you know, having a solid factor 9 level would be helpful and allow me to be much more mobile.
Okay. And what about durability, David? If you were to have gene therapy, how long would you hope it would last?
Well, I hope to live to about 100, so maybe 27 years would be good. And from what I've seen of the durability in not only the one that's commercialized, but in some of the earlier versions of factor 9 gene therapy, this seems very durable, well beyond 10 years. So I'd be hopeful that it would be, well, my lifetime, anybody, and maybe James's lifetime too, if he's, even though he's only 34.
Okay, so you want to get to the age of 100 with this. So that you're a pretty optimistic guy. Okay. Brian, can I come to you next? Safety, effectiveness, and the monitoring and follow-up required.
I don't have really any concerns about safety at this stage because I think it's been around long enough that it's reasonably well understood. I think you're a fine advertisement for that now yourself. So I wouldn't be particularly worried from a safety point of view. To be honest, to be realistic on expectations, I'd take 10% if I got it. 30 would be nice, but I wouldn't feel shortchanged if I got 10. I think that would make a substantial improvement on things. I'd like to think that it would be a 10 to 15 year kind of thing. I'm 55 now. If I got to 70, when the body's going to slow down naturally anyway, I've got those sort of 10 or 15 active years. I think that would be very worthwhile. I would be very mindful, though, of tempering expectations. I think I spoke to you about this a little while ago. I was enrolled on a clinical trial, and sort of a week or two before I was due to start, I had an irregular liver function result, and I wasn't able to participate. And having got invested in the process and despite best efforts, got my hopes up, and then it was yanked away at the last second, I found that psychologically the hardest probably thing I've had to deal with to do with hemophilia over the years. So if there was a possibility of gene therapy coming along, I would be very much baby steps and tempering expectations and planning on the least and take anything above as a bonus. But I think that kind of side of managing one's expectations and protecting your psyche really from a blow as much as your body is an important thing I think that people should take on board or give some thought to beforehand.
And that's a good additional point, actually, Brian, the need for psychological support before gene therapy, during gene therapy, and even after gene therapy, for example, if somebody loses expression.
Very much so. I mean, that would be to live in your life and then to be on the horizon that could then get pulled at some stage. Or even if just the level that you turn out with at the end isn't what you were expecting and you have to sort of rewrite your own internal route map, sort of. But just to be cognizant of those possibilities at the start of the process so it doesn't just land on your lap, because it can be quite hard to cope with.
And I know that the new WPH guidelines on gene therapy talk quite a lot about psychological support at every stage of the process. Joe, can I come to you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't really know much about it because I haven't investigated. Like I say, the long life treatment I'm on at the moment seems to be working fairly well for me. I've had other health issues. I've had a cancer scare and prostate issues, and I just haven't had problems with hemophilia in the last, say, 10 years. I haven't had serious bleeds. I mean, the point about veins is getting more and more a problem. If it was available, I'd certainly like to have it. I wouldn't jump to the top of the queue, though, because I think there's clearly people here who would need it more than I would. But I'd certainly look at it if it was available. It seems to be the future. It seems to be the present. And, you know, my safety fears, I'd obviously have to read up on that. But I'd be happy to take it, I think, after reading up on it. I don't feel an urgent need for it, is basically
okay.
Brian, can I jump in there, Brian? Interesting point that Joe makes about perhaps other people needing it more. To me, this could mostly benefit younger people. They could have it for a longer time and maintain their joints in better shape and be more active, as opposed to an older person like me whose joints are pretty well finished already. You know, I'd like to maintain them as they are. And the other issue is there may not be doses for everybody. There may be a limited number of people who can get it in the early years. And so maybe younger people would benefit more.
No, I'm not saying, I think everyone here deserves it. I'm not trying to make that point at all. I'm just saying it's only when Brian rang me and said, you want to take part of this? I said, yeah, the weekly treatment is working for me. I haven't had a bleed in a good few years. That's the only point I'm making. I think everyone deserves it.
But you made another important point, Joe, and I think that is that you haven't given it a huge amount of thought yet. But if it became an option for you, you would do that. You'd look at all the information.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the key here, because this is a therapy which you can only get once, you can't be redosed. You can't predict for any individual how long it will last, what factor level he will get, and whether any safety considerations. So it is, to an extent, somewhat going into the unknown, although there's quite a bit of use now globally. And I think our view, certainly as an organization, would be that we want people to make a fully informed personal decision. So for each of you, I think it would be a question of going through all of the parameters, all of the knowns and unknowns, looking at your expectations and trying to manage those before you make a decision. I mean, unlike any other therapy, you get this once, you can't get it again, and you can't predict what outcome you'll get. Now, you can look at the results of the clinical trials. You can look at the real world evidence, which is coming forward, which shows, you know, a significant proportion of people getting very good outcomes, but you can't predict what outcome any individual will get. And unlike factor, you can't change the dose, you can't change the treatment, you can't change the frequency. So I'm interested in your thoughts, all of you, about the fact that you can't predict any of those. You would be going into a situation where you'd have to set your expectations and then manage them, knowing that you may not achieve all of your expectations. You may achieve them all, you may achieve none of them. How do you all deal with that uncertainty? James?
I suppose with just my levels being, you know, less than 1%, like me hopefully getting 30%, obviously that would be the dream. But, you know, I suppose that would be my expectation going in. I suppose maybe getting, if I got 5 or 10, obviously it'd be a bit of a knock because I'd have to continue to take prophylaxis. But at the end of the day, it makes no difference to me. You know, the reason for me doing this is for literally, like I keep saying, it's just for the quality of life. It's for nothing else. I just want to stay out of hospital. I've missed a lot of work, you know, because of my bleeds, and I'm kind of struggling financially because, you know, I've been off so much this year, and mentally it's kind of hard to cope with. I think I've spent nearly 2 to 3 months this year in hospital alone, you know.
Wow.
And this year, and that's excluding appointments and follow-ups, you know. So I just kind of just want to enjoy life now. And like, I remember my first bleed started when I was 11, and it's been bleed after bleed since, you know. It would just be lovely just to get a break from that. And just after I had the replacement and the ankle fusion, it would be great. No, not that, like, nothing else triggers, like my knees and my shoulders, you know. It would be nice to just kind of move on from it, put everything behind me, and, you know, start the new chapter. And that's why I say, like I said, if I got the 30% rise, I wouldn't have to kind of worry about prophylaxis again, taking needles, worrying about carrying it places. To me, that's such a relief.
Brian, what about you? And as you mentioned earlier, you had a psychological blow in the past when you were approved for a trial, and then it was pulled. So in terms of the uncertainty of the outcome, how would you deal with that?
Well, for me, I'd be setting my expectations at the lowest likely result and then can treat anything else above that as a bonus, pretty much. So if there's a reasonable expectation of a range from, say, 10 to 40, I would just try and convince myself 10's what you're going to get. And then if it turns out to be more, so much the better. So I think that's the way I would manage it personally, is I would convince myself that the lower end of the ranges is what's likely to happen. And then be happily surprised if something better comes along. I couldn't really handle the disappointment otherwise.
So you'd take quite a sensible approach of setting a relatively low expectation and then hoping to achieve more than that.
Okay. Yeah, good. Purely just as a psychological safety net, as a cushion. Because I think the previous time I didn't realize there were so many things that could go wrong. But as it turned out, then I had a slightly positive result for the 88, was it?
88.
Yeah. So that would have been a complication as well, but that didn't come up until after. And actually, I'm in the hospital tomorrow to have her liver scan. So that only came to rise from that clinical trial. So I'm still trying to get my liver fixed. So you don't know what other things are going to come along. So the only way I could really go along with this process would be to expect the least and, as I say, be happily surprised at anything better that comes along. I'm very fortunate. I don't really have target joints. I don't get a lot of bleeds. I'm less than 1%, but the prophylaxis is working really quite well. So I can get through as things are. Better would be nicer, and lots better would be really nicer, but I'd be managing expectations down to the low end. It's the only way I could really progress.
Okay. Joe, what about yourself? How do you deal with all the uncertainty of not being able to predict the outcomes?
You know, I'd want to read up and see what the risks are to my liver for anything like that. And then I'd weigh up. I mean, maybe I am being a bit naive and thinking I haven't had any bad bleeds recently. That doesn't mean I couldn't get them. But just listening to what James is saying there, I can see the difference. The damage done to my ankles and my knees is done. Having gene therapy isn't going to change that end of it. It would prevent other serious bleeds. So that's actually a huge thing that I hadn't actually considered when I think of it. And then the risk, you just have to, I mean, it sounds from what's going, it's been said here, I'd have to read up on it, but you take risks with everything. But then, you know, anytime you have an operation, it's a risk. Medication is a risk. So if I was happy enough that the risks were at a minimal risk level or whatever, I'd certainly go along with it. I wouldn't be too worried about it.
Okay. David, what about yourself?
Well, with a commercial product, it looks like about 90% of the people are getting a really good response, you know, well in the therapeutic window. So 90%, I'd take a chance with that. I think the risks are pretty low of a bad outcome. It was a clinical trial. That's a bit of a different thing. You know, especially an early clinical trial, you don't know what the results are. There are different doses for different, you know, at the beginning. You may not get a good expression. You've got no data really on safety. So, you know, I'd be interested in a clinical trial, but, you know, the unknowns are a lot more daunting there. But with a commercial product, I would certainly be ready to accept the risks and see what happens.
Okay. And obviously with gene therapy, if any of you are considering gene therapy, it's important you talk to your consultant hematologist and your primary lead for this in terms of getting a better understanding of what it involves. But also, I think the hemophilia societies will be doing a lot of work in terms of education. And let me ask all of you actually one quick question about that. In terms of education on this, would you prefer individual consultations with the patient organization or small group meetings where you could discuss this in small groups together? Any thoughts on that?
I like the small group meetings. I mean, this discussion has been really interesting. It's great to hear other people's viewpoints.
I agree. I think a group this size would be perfect.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. No, I think small groups would be a good way forward.
I think individually or by groups, you know, whatever you feel more comfortable with. I did it individually, which is fine, and it's nice to get other people's opinion here on the group. So I think it's nice both ways, to be honest.
And actually, I don't see any reason why we can't do both. We can have individual consultations using perhaps also the World Federation of Hemophilia Shared Decision-Making Tool, but also small group meetings. We've always found that in a small group, somebody else asks a question and makes a point that you hadn't thought of. You think, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. So it's a good way to absorb information. So look, I think we will close it there. Thank you all very much for taking part. I think it was a very stimulating discussion, and hopefully we will talk to you all soon on this again. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Bye, everyone.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Thanks for having me on.
Thank Bye. You all.
Thanks for listening to Hemophilia Gene Therapy, From Dream to Reality. This series was funded by CSL Behring via an education and disease awareness grant. CSL Behring has not influenced nor contributed to the content development or dissemination.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.